Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 25 years of service, Ron Kapp saw plenty of action. As a soldier, an Army officer, and then a foreign service officer documenting war crimes, he's worked in some of the world's deadliest places. From the horrors of genocide to daily deprivations in Kosovo, Central Africa, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Darfur, Kapp's experienced 5 wars in 10 years. He was haunted by his inability to stop the killing of civilians and plunged into depression. His marriage, his career, and his mental health unraveled, and Kapp's found himself with a loaded pistol in the back of a pickup truck in a Sudanese desert, ready to end it all.
The clarity passed, and I was overwhelmed with a sense of futility and sadness. I had failed to stop the wars. So many people were dead because of my failures. The images were rushing at me, the 45 dead from Rachak, the raped nun from Bunia, the man with the red-rimmed eyes and his mutilated family in their cynic. I picked up the pistol and charged it, loading a bullet into the firing chamber. My hands were shaking. I put the beer down. I took the pistol off safe. I was sobbing and talking to myself, to the spheres, to no one. The pistol was ready. I shifted it to my left hand. I looked at it in my hand, lying partly on my lap and down a bit. I took a deep breath to calm myself. I was ready. Then the phone rang.
That phone call saved his life. He got help and has helped countless others as founder of the Veterans Writing Project. Ron Kapps wrote a memoir of that time called Seriously Not All Right, 5 Wars in 10 Years. He talked to us about it when it was published last April. Well, that phone call did save you. It was your then-wife, Maureen, and you were medevaced out at your own request, eventually back to D.C. with an office job. Talk about living in D.C. There was a point when you overreached, thinking that you could go see the Washington Nationals play. What was going on with you then?
Well, like you said, I was just back from my fifth war and a suicide attempt. I was newly divorced. My mom had just died. I was completely overwhelmed with everything going on in my life, and I wasn't taking care of myself. All of this PTSD in my life, all of that had to do with the fact that I didn't take care of myself. I just kept deploying and deploying and deploying without sufficient time at home to decompress, to reprogram. And when I got to Washington, I was surprised that even having been medically evacuated, even having been sent home, no one really seemed to want to follow up with medical care. No one stopped me and said, hey, you have to go get this medical treatment. I was just assigned to this office full of introverts and sat quietly doing my reading and my writing and my briefings of senior officials. And I was trying to get better on my own. Mm-hmm. I eventually sought medical care. But in that interim period, you know, the incident you talk about, I lived on Capitol Hill, not too far from where the Nationals played. So I walked down there one day to see a game. And this was at the old RFK Stadium that was one of those 70s venues where they would try and do any possible type of event from concerts to football games to baseball games. And it just had this huge area up at the very top. Well, I'd bought tickets to sit down near the field, but as I was walking down the aisle, I just realized that it was all too much. There was just far, far too much going on, and I couldn't focus, and the anxiety just began to rise in me. So rather than just running away, I decided I would try and stay in the game, but I found a nice quiet place way up on the third deck where the other misanthropes were. And we all sat quietly by ourselves, together, alone, way up on top.
Well, that's a question. I mean, we hear a lot about the military shunning or looking down upon admissions of mental illness, you know, perceived as weakness or whatever. What did asking for help mean for you, an intelligence officer and an Army officer?
Well, at that point, what I thought asking for help would mean was that I feared I would lose my security clearance, which meant I would have lost my job because I could not work without a security clearance. But I also feared I was in a unit that was an airborne unit, so I'm surrounded by paratroopers, surrounded by Rangers, and I thought that my peers would look upon me as being weak, as being broken, that I couldn't hold up, that I couldn't take the stress, that I couldn't take all the things that I was doing, when in fact it was all the things that I had done that was catching up with me.
You just said the things that you had done, but it's sometimes the things that you hadn't done that is really kind of haunting you. And I'm talking about these because I read in your book that it is important to talk about them communally. If you wish to or you're able to, do you want to share an experience that overcame you until you overcame it?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's sort of what this book is all about, is getting control of those memories and showing others that it is possible to do so. I mean, one of the events that will always haunt me was in a little town called Senec, and it was in either late August or early September of 1998 during the insurgency in Kosovo. And we went into this village called Senec because the Serbs had come through the day before and there were civilians killed. And so my team drove up to this village and we went to watch as some civilian Kosovars were burying the dead from the Serbian attack the day before. So we had to verify that these people were dead, what had happened, and that's relatively standard work. But as we were leaving, a crowd surrounded our vehicle, and I got out of the truck to talk to them, to hear what they had to say, and my translator was standing beside me, and this woman pushes her way through the crowd and holds her infant child out at arm's length, pointing the child at me. And my translator says, she wants you to take her baby away so the Serbs won't kill him. And I knew I couldn't do this because to relocate civilians, we could have lost our status in country and we would then have been no help to anyone. And so I felt like I was hiding behind this bureaucracy, and that will always haunt me. And that action not taken is one of the things that gets at what Jonathan Shea and Brett Litz do at the Boston VA hospital in their research on what are called moral injuries. Mm-hmm. And it's some action that a person takes or fails to take or even witnesses that transgresses closely held personal beliefs and moral beliefs. And I knew, of course, that the right thing to do would be say, okay, I'm going to take your child with us and give this child protection, to take that child in my arms. But diplomatically, politically, professionally, I knew that to do so would mean I would be put out of the country and perhaps my entire team. But I also have to add here that one of the other internationals, I think someone from the UN High Commission for Refugees, did come back that evening. And as is part of their charter, their authorization in country, they were allowed to do this sort of thing. And so they did relocate some of the children to a safer village.
We're talking with Ron Capps. He was a career Army and Foreign Service when PTSD knocked him off track. He got to the other side by writing, among other things, and is founder of the Veterans Writing Workshop. His new book is called Seriously All Right. Well, Ron Capps, you had fallen apart in the past over drinks with another officer in Senec, remembering this experience with this child and the slaughtered families and a Serb officer with a gun to his head in another incident. And you write, this is the last time I let myself publicly go. So is this book letting yourself go publicly?
Well, I think it is in many ways. The night that you referenced, one of my colleagues came in to the room where I was staying and was doing this writing at night, and I just fell apart. I was crying, and I'm sure it was a terribly embarrassing moment for my colleague. But I never let go of my emotions in front of another colleague. Now that I'm retired, this story, the important part of this story is the story of hope, that there's a road home, that people can find this road. And if writing is what works for people, that's fabulous. If it's art, dance, music, drama, traditional therapies, acupuncture, whatever it is, if there's a road home, go find it. And that's the hopeful part of the story. But that hopeful part doesn't really make sense without telling the how I got out to that point in the desert. So I am letting go of it. It is sort of a type of therapy for me to just allow these stories to be told. But what I really want people to understand is that there is a road home, and you can see what happened to me. Much worse things have happened to others, but this is my story, and here's how I came home. Maybe you can find your own way.
And for you, in coping with your PTSD, took a what you call a journey through Prozacistan, tried drinking too much, tried talk therapy, a number of typical ways to do it, dug deeper into the nature of this returning soldier, leading you to your own writing. Now, how is that connected for you?
Well, when I came back from my service overseas, I was clearly not all right, and I needed help. So I sought medical care with a psychiatrist. I was given medications. We tried different rounds, different combinations, different cocktails of medications. I was doing talk therapy. We were trying all sorts of things, and maybe my expectations were too high, but I didn't feel as if I was getting well enough, fast enough. And whether we changed the drug or we went to a different type of therapy, nothing really seemed to me to be working until I realized that the writing I had done in country, in theater, and the writing I continued to do at home seemed to be helping me. So just let me give a little bit of background here. My job as an intelligence officer, or my job as a State Department political officer, was to go to some foreign country, get on the ground, learn as much as I could about the culture, the society, the people, their grievances, their desires, their needs. What's the history of this rebellion? How did it form? How can we try to solve it? And then write about that to a readership back in Washington, whether at the State Department or the Pentagon. And so I would go out into these areas and come back and write these relatively crisp, dry reports about what quite often were messy, horrible acts of cruelty. And even when I was in theater, I knew that this wasn't enough. I knew I had to capture more of this. So when I finished my work for the day, I would go back to my tent or to my room, wherever it was, and I would sit down and I would continue to write. And I would write the whole story. I would write about the look on that woman's face rather than the fact that there had been 8 killed in that village. Mm-hmm. There had been 11 wounded, with one being a 72-year-old man. Just the facts in those government reports. I wrote more about it. I wrote more about what it felt like, about what their looks said to me. And so I did this for 10 years. When I came home, I still had all of this writing, and I started going through all of that writing and editing it and just rewriting everything until those memories were no longer able to take control of me. I put up a little sign in the attic that I use as my office, and it says, either you control the memory or the memory controls you. And that's what I did. I wrote until I controlled the memories. And all of that writing is what became this book.
Can you control the memories, Ron Capps?
I think there are some memories that I may never fully control, because there are some things that I haven't just been able to get to yet, I have not written about. I know they're still out there. I know they're still in my head. But when I need to write about them, I will. But I would say that I have gotten control of the things. I've gotten control of the dead who came to talk to me at night. They no longer control me.
Ron Capps, I want to thank you very much for your time.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Ron Capps, his new book is called Seriously Not All Right, 5 Wars in 10 Years. It's his account of the horrors that led to his diagnosis of PTSD and how he coped with it and how he became the founder of the Veterans Writing Project. For more on the book and to read works by veterans on the O Dark 30 blog, you'll find links at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio, or on Twitter at wordofmouth. From the bow and arrow to the unmanned drone, the weapons of war have evolved significantly. But one tool has persisted for centuries: music. The not-so-sweet sounds of psychological warfare. One Word of Mouth continues.